I was in my early 40s, had that same red flag experience of like, I'm not registering this as stress or hurry or whatever, but my body is.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Yunus, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Be Real. I'm here with my brand new friend, Jennifer Dukes Lee. I'm assuming you go by Jennifer for the most time. Not your whole full author name.
Some people used to call me Dukes, though, when I was growing up. Yeah, and here's why. Class of 37 people, four of us were Jennifer.
Really?
There was like 10 girls. Four girls were Jennifers, and three of the Jennifers were Jennifer Lynn.
Oh my goodness.
So we were all kind of known by our last name. So all growing up, I was Dukes.
Dukes is kind of fun because it's kind of like a strong girl name, like just setting you apart, you know, a little bit. My older sister's name is Jennifer too. So I'm guessing I know like the time frame in which you were born I think it was the most popular name at one point.
Yeah. You know, it's bad when the baby book comes out that's when you're a mom picking names for kids and you know that baby book that's called Beyond Jennifer and Jason. The baby naming book is called. It's like, okay, I feel.
You're like, I'm offended.
I'm having an identity crisis here.
I am definitely not feeling unique at all. All right. Well, Jennifer, you're our Jennifer. You're our first Jennifer on the show. So like you're special to us. Like you were our number one Jennifer. So we're glad that you're here with us today. And I just want to jump right in because I just saw on your Instagram, you guys can follow Jennifer at Jennifer Dukes Lee. I read this Instagram and it just stopped me in my tracks because I was like, oh my gosh, this is such an invitation. And the title is Take a Hustle Detox. And your book that we're going to talk about today is Growing Slow. But just like walk us through this Instagram and which of these things, you know, you give several tips that are all attainable on how to take a hustle detox. Why in the world are we all so busy? Can you just diagnose my life right now? Like what is going on? Why am I hustling all the time?
Yeah, well, culture has this expectation to get you next level all the time. Go big or go home, scale faster and higher and push harder. And what happens is we wake up in the morning with a hurried heart. Before our feet even hit the floor, our mind is calculating all the ways that we're behind. And it has more to do with the state of our heart instead of what's just on the calendar boxes. And we know that's true because our calendars were whited out a year ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us still had a heart. And it's just the way that we think about things, about our lives and our progress so far. And it's also, you know, about the way we respond when we're in a long line at Starbucks or the way that we're reacting in backed up traffic or whatever it is, you know, it's just that sense of, I got to get going. And hurry hangs around the heart in a way that causes real physical trauma to the body. Mm. It's called hurry sickness. And I had it and it affects sleep. It affects digestion. It affects stress levels and all those things. And so a lot of times people think, well, I can't slow down because I have things to accomplish. Mm. And it really used to bug me when people said, Jennifer, you need to slow down. Mm. They were right. But it wasn't the way that I thought. It wasn't that I had to quit my job or stop being productive or doing all of those things. They were putting into place little habits and practices that really make us aware of our bodies and our surroundings and setting the tone for our day. And so on my Instagram, I have really been trying to give my followers practical ideas on how to be intentional in this way, to show people that it's possible to slow down in a world that says it's absolutely not possible. Mm. And my goal is that as you think about your life, I think that we think that in order to get the life we want, we have to chase that life down. Mm. But really, in order to live the life we want, we have to slow that life down. Mm. And so this hustle detox, I'm like, let's just do this at the start of summer. the world is beginning to open up. So we're going to be in a big hurry to kind of jump back into old patterns. But this is a sort, summer offers a sort of reset. And they're just little things. And so the posts that you're mentioning on Instagram has things like turning off phone notifications, planting and tending a garden, even if it's just a little herb garden in your kitchen window, saving 20 minutes a day for play, packing one picnic a week, finding water and sitting by it. They're just all these little things with science to back up the reasoning on how just these little acts and actions and habits can really make a difference in your stress levels and how you feel about your life.
Can you, okay, so now you've said so many things that I want to talk about. We're not even going to have time to get past one question, but you said that you had hurry sickness. So Jennifer, can you take us back? Like, because you seem like, even while we're talking, I'm like, you seem like a very peaceful person. And I don't know if that's cultivated, that you've worked on that, but tell us about what got you to hurry sickness and then what got you through it.
Yeah. So I've probably had a hurry sickness my whole life because I'm an Enneagram 3. Mm-hmm. And the
Welcome.
Book that I more could
Welcome,
have
my
more.
Friend. One Enneagram 3 to another. Let's all achieve together.
That's right. So like it makes zero sense that I would write a book called Growing Slow. The book that I could have more easily written would be one called Growing Fast.
Yes.
Like
fast,
a real
further,
kick in the pants.
Faster, leveler, stronger, better.
Right. So it's the way I'm wired. And I'm glad that God wired me the way that I am. And I feel good about the things that I've accomplished in my life. I don't feel good about the pace that I've run through life. I don't feel good as a result of my misprioritized life. I was an adrenaline junkie. And so it was kind of born, it was nurtured into me when I was a news reporter, when I lived on deadlines. And you don't have to be a news reporter to have hurry sickness, but I didn't even know it was a sickness. I thought it was fun. Like, let's get that story in by 5 o'clock, you know, run out to the, see what happened after the aftermath of a tornado, which obviously tornadoes aren't fun, but this was the way my life was constant. Who knew what was going to happen next? Get the story in, write it on the back of my checkbook blank if I had to. Scott and I, the conscious decision, not very long after 9/11, actually, to move back to his fifth generation family farm to raise our children because we knew we couldn't keep that pace. And in 2005, a photographer from the Des Moines Register came here to take a picture of us to go with an opinion essay in the Des Moines Register that was sort of my farewell piece about why we were moving back to the farm. And, that was day one of Growing Slow, that moment. And I wish I would have celebrated day one of Growing Slow back in 2005, but I didn't because I kept replaying conversations I had with colleagues, professors, friends who said, you are throwing your life away. You are throwing away your potential, but they weren't running the life, the pace that I was. I was, and I was the only one that could make this decision for my life. You know, it didn't take very long, Nicole, honestly, for me to get back into that pace just because you move where it looks like Hallmark Channel life, you know, open skies and spaces and all this kind of stuff. I quickly found other ways to become an adrenaline junkie. And one of the ways was through Christian publishing. Like, you know, there's this pressure on authors to grow platforms, which is essentially an indication to your publisher, what your audience is like, who's going to buy your book. And it feels weird and sometimes it feels icky. But there is that real pressure sometimes on us to grow and to go big or go home. And I had to stop that because maybe that would have worked when I was 22 in the newsroom, but it was not working in my 40s. And I ended up in a doctor's office and he's like, you're stressed out and you've got hurry sickness.
Oh,
and
really? Like, that's where it happened? You just were having physical?
And I was like, I'm not stressed out. I know stressed out people and I'm not one of them.
Spoken like a real Enneagram 3. You're like, I don't have any feelings. I, Jennifer, I had a similar experience in some ways where I got shingles. like on my face, you know, and I'm in the dermatologist's office for my kid. And I'm like, hey, can you look at my face? And she's like, you have shingles. You know, I was in my early 40s and just had that same red flag experience of like, I'm not registering this as stress or hurry or whatever, but my body is, my body's trying to tell me something. And of course you can, all y'all who've had shingles, you can get shingles without being stressed out, but like it is a sign that your immune system's suppressed. And so anyway, I am like, it is interesting that you manage to find, I almost feel like you must have learned more by finding out that you can hurry no matter where you are, even if you're on a farm in a beautiful locale. Like you probably learned more about yourself realizing like this is a state of mind and a state of heart. It's not like circumstantial. It's not related to the newsroom, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Because when all of that was stripped away and all of my life coping mechanisms were stripped away, which productivity is my favorite coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have much to be productive with when we moved here and I was a young mom. It exposed a lot about who I was. But instead of really digging deep and sorting that out, I just figured out new ways to feed the beast. Mm.
So what's changed since then? Because I mean, obviously you're like, I did that and then I did that and then I found another way to be busy and then I was hurry sickness again. Why now? Right. You know, what happened? Why now?
Yeah, well, certainly the appointment to the doctor was a big thing, but it wasn't just an immediate snap of the fingers and everything was okay. Mm. Around that same time, here on the farm, we weren't able to get into the fields due to rain that was just flooding out the fields. And we were just praying for God to stop the rain so we can get in the field. And I remember saying to Scott, it is going to be okay. We got to have faith that God is going to let us get into the field. It's just going to be a growing, slow year on the farm, slow into the field and slow out of the field. And pondering that in my prayer life, I realized that what I believed to be true for the land, that it would be a growing slow year, I really didn't believe to be true for my life. Mm. That didn't seem possible. And it was about the same time frame as the doctor's appointment. And so I began to explore what was going on in my body, in my life, and began to just try different things. Mm. Like, what do I got to lose? Because look how this life of hustle is treating me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put into some practice some different things in my life. And it was more than just like getting off of committees or quitting jobs and stuff like that. I was still busy and productive. But it was more about a state of the heart and how I felt about the things that I was growing in my life.
Mm. What are some of the qualities of who you've always been that were suppressed by hurry and now are more prevalent in your life?
I think that as a writer, I'm an introspective, I mean, people used to say like analytical or deep or, you know, like, I think people are just sometimes kind of confounded by the way that I think and process things.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from a political issue to the way the sun rises or the way the leaves move in the wind. I mean, just things like that fascinate me. And it's given me time and space to do those things that I really enjoy, to study and to ponder. I was asked for a magazine recently, what genre of writing really helps me as a writer. Mm. And it was wild because I had everything in there from poetry to research.
Yeah.
Like I love to learn and to just fill my mind with interesting things about our world and the way that God shows himself faithful in this beautiful world we live in. And I've always loved that. I remember being a little girl out at the Marathon Park and I'd get out on, we had gravel pits and that we swam in. They were just horrible, dirty, dirty things.
I was like, what? A gravel pit that you swim in?
A gravel pit.
It's a pit of gravel with water in it?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm obviously not from your area of the country. So I'm like, tell me more. I mean, I swam in some dirty ponds. I'm just trying to understand what a gravel pit is.
Basically a dirty pond.
Perfect.
And so there was a raft and I would dive off that raft and go down to the bottom, just swim down, down, down and feel how it went from warm to cool. Mm. And there was mud at the bottom. I would pick up the mud in my hands and come to the top, which sounds really disgusting, but it was just feeling at one with nature mm-hmm. and the beautiful things that God has created. I mean, the coolness of mud is a really beautiful thing to me. Yeah. And like I said, people think I'm weird and analytical, but this has given me space and permission just to enjoy the natural world around me.
I resonate with that so much. I feel like that's one of those gifts. I think we're all inherently creative, no matter what Enneagram type you are. And I know I've said we're going to talk about Enneagram types later because it keeps coming up with all my interviews. But that creativity, I think, gets suppressed in hurry. I don't think creativity and hurry go together very well. So I love hearing that. And I love just like the way that you've also set up your book around seasons. And obviously, like, there's lots to say about seasons, but gosh, it's so prevalent. Each of us can, no matter if you live in Manhattan or Des Moines, everyone can sort of know what a season feels like, even if you're in Florida, because, you know, it's interesting that people say when they move to Florida, but what I miss is the seasons and like how we're sort of wired that way. So tell us a little bit about like the growing season and natural rhythm of seasons and how that teaches us about healthy rhythms in our life, if you would.
Yes, land is a wonderful tutor mm-hmm. and has taught me the way of growing slow. We plant millions of seeds into 700 acres on our farm. And that happens in the spring. We put those seeds way down in the dirt. And sometimes it's days, even weeks before we will see even a hint of growth above the ground. And isn't that like all of us, the spring seasons when we're eager to plant seeds and we want to see growth. And sometimes we have to wait a long time. And if I was a corn plant, I would be freaking out. Like, what am I doing down here? But as a farmer's wife, I've never once seen a corn plant freaking out.
Yeah.
And Jesus says that plants, they do not labor or spin. Mm. You see that out here in spring. And then comes summer where there's beautiful, lush, we hope, growth. Mm. And that growth is quite imperceptible over days. But you can look back over a week or two and see indeed there has been growth. And I think then again, the metaphor is true for us that sometimes we're in the midst of things, it doesn't seem like we're seeing any growth at all. Mm-hmm. And summer teaches us to take time to look back and see what truly has grown.
Yeah.
And then comes beautiful harvest. And there is nothing quite like holding that ripened thing in your hand, whether it's the crops of a farm or ideas or businesses or, you know, sending our kids off to college mm-hmm. or whatever that happens to be in a harvest of our lives. And then comes winter. Winter can feel very cold and dreary as if nothing is happening. Mm-hmm. And Nicole, I didn't want to write about winter mm-hmm. when I wrote Growing Slow. In fact, in the book proposal, I didn't even include anything about
You're winter. Like, this is a three-season book. Like, I don't have anything. I don't need that other season that God made.
No, I just look back on the book proposal. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even have anything in there. I thought I had nothing to say. And I think the reason is even as I was writing the book, honestly, I think that I am wired for spring, summer, fall, harvest. Yeah. And we think that we can constantly go in that pattern. But if there is one quarter of a growing season is dead, and maybe we need winter seasons too. Mm. And when I turned in my book, I only had two chapters on winter. And I told my editor, that's enough. People don't want to read about winter. That's like, yuck. What a horrible way to end the book. And well, of course, she came back and said, you're going to have to add another chapter. And turns out chapter 17 that I added into the book is my favorite chapter of all, because it shows what is actually happening in winter under the ground. Mm. And it gives us a perfect metaphor for healing in our own lives during winter season. So I'm really excited about that.
Mm. Did you find like Did something personal happen in you? Because I mean, obviously, I think a lot of the reasons we become writers is because it's through our writing that we ourselves grow. It's interesting to me that it ended up being your favorite chapter and you didn't want to write it. And I'm wondering, looking back on it, what did you learn from chapter 17?
Yeah. So the book, the chapter is called The Slow Healing Work of God. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a poem by Pierre
somebody.
Desjardins. Oh my God. I just butchered his name.
I can't pronounce anyone's name. So I'm like, we'll include it. Maybe we can we find it after this and we'll include it?
Yes,
we'll write a little something.
Yes.
Thanks for your poem.
Gosh. Thank you for your poem. And I had to, like, even in the audiobook recording, I had to be like, tell me again how to say that. Tell me again how to say that. Yeah. So we got it. Anyway, it's based on this poem, which is beautiful. But the it's also based on the fact that in winter, rocks that are under the surface erupt to the surface. Mm. And we have to go out and pick rock, which is a really ridiculous word because there's multiple rocks. So we have to go out and pick rock from the field so that they don't damage the equipment. It was really bad where I grew up. There was a lot of rocks and fields, and that was my first job, was picking rock.
Wow.
And there was a rock when I was writing that chapter that appeared in a field out by the river, and Scott texted me a picture of it. And it was the size of a living room recliner.
Oh my goodness.
It had not been visible.
What?
And now, yeah. So it was just like, you know, maybe 6 inches above the surface. And he thought he could just pull it out by hand. He moved the dirt around it, couldn't get it out. He had to bring the skid loader out. And it took 45 minutes to dig out this enormous rock. And it showed, he calls it the healing of the land. That's what my husband calls it, which I think is a really beautiful way to put it. And I began to wonder about the rocks that don't get a chance to move to the surface from the soil of my own heart when I don't allow myself to go through winter season. Mm. And what would it be like to allow God to pick rock in essence? Mm-hmm. Not just once, but every so often, because just in the same way that rocks emerge in the fields from the frost cycle of the land, rocks want to emerge out of my soul. And so I wrote about that, and I shared about rocks that I've carried around in my heart for a very long time, since I've been a little girl. And in the barn, Scott and I created a sanctuary. We painted a wall black, and people are sending us their stones on paper rocks. And I pray for them, and I put them on this wall, and I paint over them. And it's just an act communally of, as it says in Galatians 6, to carry one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And this chapter, and then there's a whole session in the Bible study that helps people unearth their rocks. And for me, you asked about how it affected me personally. For me, it has been a great time of introspection quite regularly, to examine the stones that I carry, some stones of unforgiveness related to some things in my personal life, some stones that are related to the way that I felt about myself since I was probably 5 years old in different ways. And then just little stones. We know how even a pebble in our shoe can be super irritating. We got to get rid of those too. So daily, it's just, it can feel like an act of repentance. It can feel like an act of letting go. People have started to send them to me. And yesterday I got a whole bunch in my mailbox and I was deeply moved. And I said to the Lord, I don't know if I can do this, honestly, because I didn't imagine the emotional impact of receiving other people's burdens in this way. And I'm speaking to you from a very fresh place because it's only been in the last week that I've begun to receive these. And I didn't anticipate how difficult it would be, but I am committed to this act of helping carry people's stones to the feet of Jesus.
Yeah. It's a beautiful work. And I remember very, very early on in my counseling practice, was reading Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster. And we don't like the word discipline very much in the world. People like to say rhythms instead. But one of the things that was in there was confession. as a discipline. And Richard Foster sort of teaches this image that in confession between you and I, you aren't bringing me your burdens. We are meeting at the cross, and like I'm creating space for the cross of Christ to be between you and I. And it was just one of the most helpful and edifying and building up and strengthening like visuals that I could have over my next 10 years as a therapist was, oh, I don't have to take in your burden, like in, although I will be in many ways exhausted by it, as you are. Like empathy is to be with you, right? I'm going to feel deeply, as it says in scripture, that Jesus feels deeply for us, but I get to do that with the cross of Christ between us. And I just offer that to you as like a little thing that I've really tried to keep in my mind as I've received, you know, it is healing for people to be able to express their own wounds in that way. So I love that you're doing that. And I know God's going to use that in big ways in your own life too.
I think that's really helpful to think of it in that way, because I didn't feel like, and I know that I'm not responsible in the sense that God will relieve that based on the power of my prayer. But having the idea or the sense of the cross, meeting at the cross with this person, helps.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that.
I love the like, let us come before the throne of grace with confidence so we may receive mercy and find help in our time of need. Another visual, Ruth Haley Barton, another one of my favorite authors, sort of talks about bringing your friend with you. Like, I just am your brother or sister in Christ. Like, I'm walking with you. Let us come before the throne of grace with confidence. And I actually especially love that you set it up so people are sending you things. There's not this instant, I've got to like now respond to you. I need to solve this. I need to like offer you another word, because you're offering them your words. You've offered them your book, and that is healing. I know, just as a three, I'm kind of like, well, what do you need me to do for you next? You know? And in reality, I'm like, I've had authors minister so deeply to me, like as if they're the closest friends, the closest, most intimate friends, you know, Henry Nouwen and Brennan Manning and Richard, all these, you know, Ruth Haley Barton they're on my, you know, bedstand. And you're like, I feel like this is a personal friend. So Jennifer, I know your work because I've read it already. Like, offers the invitation really to come before the throne of grace, wherever you are in your spiritual journey. Not everyone listening to this podcast is on that journey, but that offer to come to the throne of grace is for anyone. Does not matter where you are or where you think you are in your spiritual journey. Coming before a throne of grace is the opportunity. And I know that you set us up so well for that, both through your book and through your Bible study.
I'm really encouraged by that. I feel like I've jumped into a new area of ministry that is such a personal way. And that is, you know, I don't do a ton of speaking. I do some speaking, but I'm very limited in what I say yes to. Mm-hmm. And this is such a tangible way to partner with those who have taken the study. And, you know, I think about those stones, and I think about, the women who show up at the tomb on Easter, on Resurrection Day, and they're looking at each other and like, they're like, who will roll away that stone? It's very large. And it's like, I think that we think that sometimes that our stones are so big that they can't be tended to, but no matter the size of the stone, Jesus knows exactly what, he knows how to roll away those stones. Mm-hmm. And he really does want to pick rock. And then there's this mysterious verse in Revelation that talks about that when we get to heaven, there will be a white stone with our name on it. And I ponder sometimes, I wonder what that will say. Like, what is that? He doesn't just leave us like, being at the foot of the cross is a great place to be, but he also brings us to the garden, and then he brings us to heaven and gives us a new stone. And I'm so excited to see what that word will be.
Mm. Oh my goodness. I love that. I love that little mysterious invitation as well in the book of Revelation. So you guys, it's been so good to have you, Jennifer. And I'm really excited that you're our first and best Jennifer, just to feed your Enneagram 3 ego, which is really the opposite of what we've been talking about doing. And I really, really love this gift to the world that your book is. So you guys, you're going to want to pick up Jennifer Duke's lead book, Growing Slow, Lessons on Unhurrying Your Heart from an Accidental Farm Girl. I love that you combine beautiful story and imagery with wonderful practical teaching. So we will be following along and I'm really glad for that. I have one final question. We're going to come up out of this beautiful sacred space we've been in, come back to the surface of life where we all function, on our daily life. And I just want you to share with our listeners, because I always ask everyone this question, what is a pattern, a product, or a person who's just like saving your life right now? It can be as superficial as you want it to be. It's just something you're like excited about in the world besides mud from the gravel pits, which I myself can totally relate to. I think that's beautiful. So
I have a Breville espresso machine that I love. And I have a daughter who's home from college who is a barista.
Ooh.
And she is helping me create these beautiful coffee creations. I'm having one.
I'm very jealous. Y'all can't see us, but we're holding up our coffee cups right now. What is in here is not good. Like what I am drinking right now is only hot. There's nothing else good about it. What are you drinking right now? What is your favorite coffee creation that you make?
Well, what right here, I just have an Americano.
Okay.
But what Lydia has made for me, and this is not bad for you, is a cafe miau. Another word that I'm probably mispronouncing and that we'll have to fix along with the poet.
We're like, follow our show notes, guys. We have no idea what we're saying.
And it's like a double shot of espresso. It's on ice. It's with oat milk or almond milk, honey as a natural sweetener, and cinnamon. It is
really
so good. Yes.
That sounds like a thing where I'd be like, Lydia, if you're going to make me one, I'll try it, but I'm not going to have it unless you make it for me. And then I would be like all into it and I would love it. It sounds so good. I wish I could teleport into your living room and have a cafe meal. We don't know how to say it with you, whatever that thing is. I wish I was drinking it with you. It sounds amazing.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. So my favorite product is my espresso machine and my person that I guess nobody else can have is Lydia.
Yes.
Unless you go to her coffee shop and she will make you one.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Rock Valley, Iowa.
Valley guys, if you happen to be there, you know, the way of the world is somebody will listen and be like, I'm from Rock Valley. You know, they'll reach
out. That's right.
Send us a note if you're from Rock Valley. We want to know. Lydia's probably, we'll hook you up. If you're from Rock Valley listening right now, we will buy you the drink.
Yes, yes, you have got to let us know if you say, I heard you on Nicole Eunice, or I heard mom on Nicole Eunice.
That's
it has to be to Lydia.
You're like, I don't know where I heard you, but I heard about this drink. And you just go ask for Lydia. We are buying your drink. Lydia will make sure that we've paid for your drink. Rock Valley, you're welcome, guys. You're welcome. I hope you enjoy. All right. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for being on the show. It's been awesome to have you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.